Materially speaking, these are considered great, great qualifications. We all, hey, Nandini Harbol, welcome home. Finally, we miss you so much. So in a sense, there's nothing wrong with having all these opulences, but unfortunately, people, if you desire them too much for your personal enjoyment, it's not very helpful for your spiritual life. Would you rather sit on a chair? Are you comfortable there? Okay, because this chair is there. And even there's a beautiful prayer by one great queen. She was praying to Krishna, and she said, "My Lord, your lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling." So, like, again, it's not so much that these things are in themselves bad, but if we're too much attached to them, then they stand in the way of our spiritual relationship with God. And what do we find materially attractive? Let's translate it into real day-to-day terms. It's very general: wealth, opulence, beauty. So let's say, how does it look? Yes. Yes, yes. Aishwarya Rai, in India, she's the big hit. She's, I remember, I know the names, yeah. I remember in my class one time in Bhakti Rai Bhava, I was actually on these verses, I was doing a PowerPoint, so I popped up Aishwarya Rai, and all the girls go, yay! All the Gurukulis. Okay, so that's beauty, is pop stars, film stars. What about, let's see, respectable parentage? When we think of someone that's in a very advanced family, who do we think of? Huh? Srila Prabhupada. Oh yeah, his family was very exalted. That's for devotees. But we're talking now about a materialistic viewpoint. Huh? Yeah, like royalty. High parentage, it's considered high parentage. Great opulence. Bill Gates, that's the first thing that popped in the mind, eh? Bill Gates, and let's see, education, who's very knowledgeable? Huh? Scientists, doctors, we're a little bit in awe of them. So if we're very attached to having that position, then because we want to be comfortable or famous or attractive, that's not very helpful, because then we're putting ourselves too much in the center. And they said it's in the Bible too, right? It's more easy for a elephant or a camel to enter through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Of course, we had one when I was young, one Bible scholar was telling us that there used to be gates leading into cities, and the gates were very small, and they were considered the eye of the needle, and the camel would go through, but with great difficulty. Doesn't necessarily literally mean through the eye of a needle. But anyways, the idea is that when one has wealth and all kinds of opulences, beauty, influence, one can easily get intoxicated by them and think oneself quite important, and that's not very helpful for one's spiritual life. Yeah, I remember also, on Facebook you get some interesting, what do they call them? Posts. So there was one nice one. I asked God for beauty and he gave me something else. Like, it was like, we have desires, but sometimes we have what we want, but sometimes God gives us what we need. We may think, if I'm beautiful, I'll be happy, but maybe if God makes me not so beautiful, I learn something else that's even more beautiful. That makes me more beautiful. For instance, it said that even an ugly man can become very beautiful if he has a lot of knowledge, especially if he has spiritual knowledge. He becomes effulgent and beautiful. Or I asked God for a healthy child, and God gave me, say, a mongoloid, but I learned much more by taking care of my disadvantaged child. than I would have by just having a perfect child that I could have been very proud of, etc. and etc. It was a very interesting post. I liked it very much. So Prabhupada says, one who has all these assets, his wealth, beauty, etc., should know that they are all meant for the advancement of Krishna consciousness, all meant for to advance our loving relationship with God. Unfortunately, when a person is misguided, he misuses his high position for sense gratification. Therefore, the uncontrolled senses are considered plunderers. The good position one attains by executing religious principles is wasted as the plundering senses take it away. By executing religious principles under the laws of Varna Ashram Dharma, one is placed in a comfortable position. One may very easily use his assets for the further advancement of Krishna consciousness. One should understand that the wealth and opportunity one gets in the material world should not be squandered. You know this word squandered? It means wasted. Should not be squandered in sense gratification. They are meant for the advancement of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada would often remind his Western disciples, you've been born in a wealthy country, you're beautiful, you have so many opportunities to advance materially. He would always remind us, your opportunity is very rare. Actually, most of the world, we're used to it. We've grown up in such opulence. People come from other parts of the world. Like, I don't know if you've heard of a woman called Ayan Hirsha Ali. She was from Somalia. And Somalia was under a very oppressive government, and there was so much war, and extremist Islam was very influential then. She just was being forced to marry a man she wanted nothing to do with, so she escaped. And she came to Holland, and she became a big person in Holland. She got in government. But when she first came to Holland, she felt like she was in paradise. She couldn't believe it, that people would take your garbage away for you every day. Where she was living, it was like, everything was garbage and uncontrolled. She couldn't believe that the buses would come in time, and that you could tell when the buses would arrive. It would say the bus will arrive at such and such a time, and she thought the people were so nice and well behaved. Of course, as she got a little bit more into studying, she became interested in political science, and she was told that in Holland there was no such thing as tribal feuds or differences. She says, I didn't believe it for a second. It might be taking place in tribal feuds, tribal opposition to one another. And of course, it's there in all countries, this opposition, but it manifests in maybe more sophisticated ways. Anyway, the main point that I was making is that she was an example, and Prabhupada often says that in his lectures. People come from less advantaged part of the world, and they feel like they're in paradise. Of course, if they live here a little while longer, they find out that paradise, there's problems in paradise too, serious ones. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The main point is that we should know that the life that we have of relative ease and comfort is very rare on this planet. We're conditioned to it, but it's very rare. We're living, and actually, most of what comfort we are getting is at the expense of great discomfort for others. This is something to reflect on. That's why many people go vegan, people go into natural living, because they don't want to exploit these people in third world countries. It's very sobering when you think about it. And that's why Srila Prabhupada actually wanted us to live off the land and be self-sufficient, so that we didn't have to exploit others, so that we would be also implicated. When I was reading this, I was remembering another part of the Bhagavatam. Not the Bhagavatam, it was the Science of Self-Realization. Prabhupada speaks in there. There's a very nice book we call Wetenschap van het Zelfrealisatie for the Dutch people. If you get a chance, I would recommend it. And there's many nice articles in there. There's Prabhupada, he's giving lectures, or he's being interviewed, or he's just having conversations, and he's speaking many wonderful points, short sections, and very enlightening. So when I was reading this, I remembered what Prabhupada said in another place about the opulence that we have and how we shouldn't misuse it. Prabhupada said, the Bhagavad Gita reminds such fortunate, well-born persons that their good fortune is due to their past devotional activities. Unfortunately, the children of these families do not consult the Bhagavad Gita, being misguided by illusion, maya. Birth in a well-to-do family solves the problems of having to find sufficient food from the beginning of life. And later, a comparatively easier and more comfortable way of life can be led. Being so situated, one has a good chance to make progress in spiritual realization. But, as ill luck would have it, due to the influence of the present Iron Age, according to the Vedic calendar, we're living in the Iron Age of Kali, which means the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. And Prabhupada said, due to the current Iron Age, which is full of machines and mechanical people, very poetic, the sons of the wealthy and misguided are misguided for sense gratification and they forget the good chance they have for spiritual enlightenment. Therefore, nature, by her laws, is setting fire in these golden homes. You know the story of the Ramayana? It's a beautiful story of the Ramayana. There was this great demoniac king, and his kingdom was made of gold that he had robbed from all parts of the world. But one time he challenged Ram, Hari Rama, Rama, and he stole Rama's wife. And a messenger of Ram went to the city of Lanka and opposed this demon. His name was Ravana, and he set the fire. He set the whole place on fire. So Prabhupada says that illusion is setting fires in these golden homes. He's making a very nice metaphor there, or an analogy. Prabhupada said, it was the golden city of Lanka under the regime of the demoniac Ravana that was burned to ashes. That is the law of nature. So it's the law of nature that if we misuse the God-given wealth that we have, that one way or another, it will be set on fire. And that was what was going on when Prabhupada arrived in America. He was very surprised to see all these young people leaving home, and the parents were very disturbed. Many of them were becoming hippies, and Prabhupada is always absorbed in the vision of the scripture, and then, oh, in the golden homes, fire is being set by the laws of nature, because the parents, although they tried to live a very regulated life, the whole point of the life was sense gratification and comfort. And the children were disillusioned. They didn't see that this is what was going to really give them happiness. And they thought it was something wrong here. So they had the whole flower power revolution, the whole hippie movement. And even today, in wealthy families, okay, the hippie movement is somewhat subsided, but if you go to wealthy people's homes today, you'll be surprised and shocked at how disturbed people are. One devotee was telling me, she was on Sankirtan, and she went into a home, because we go door to door, and she had some nice books and beautiful paintings that she was showing the people. And the father was very interested, but the mother and son were literally beating the father, so that he wouldn't take them. So she just kind of packed up and left really quickly. We didn't want to. So even though she said it was a beautiful home, everything looked paka, first class. Paka means Bengali for first class. Shocking. And Prabhupada says in the purport today, this Krishna consciousness movement is therefore teaching people to control the mind and five knowledge acquiring senses by a definite process. One should practice a little austerity and not spend money on anything other than the regulative life of devotional service. The devotional service is Prabhupada's translation of the word bhakti. Have you heard the word bhakti before? Different kinds of yoga. One kind of yoga is called bhakti yoga. So people call it devotionalism or devotion. But Prabhupada said devotional service, practical. Because devotion, you can interpret it in all kinds of ways. But Prabhupada said a definite process, very practical. And he even said more specifically that devotion is meant specifically for God. In India, they have all kinds of things that they call bhakti now. Desha bhakti. That's considered, you know, if you have devotion for the land, that's considered bhakti, but it's not bhakti. Or devotion, Shiva bhakti, or Durga bhakti. But Prabhupada said, strictly speaking, the word bhakti is meant for God. He said, you can avoid worshipping some great personality, like a demigod or a great politician, and you might be considered impolite. But if you don't worship the Supreme Lord, you become condemned. Very strong words. Condemned by the laws of nature to suffer. Especially because one's disconnected from one's source. How can one be happy if one is disconnected from one's source? The senses demand that one see beautiful things. Therefore, money should be spent for decorating the deity in the temple. We see our deities, they look very beautiful. Of course, Prabhupada told us not to spend a lot of money on opulent things for the deities. Like he said, don't buy gold and diamonds, because in the West, if you do that, you'll only attract thieves. So the jewelry that we offer to the deities is, generally speaking, simple things that are quite beautiful, but not something that will attract thieves, because what's the use of that? In India, they have huge temples, and they're government protected, and there's millions of dollars worth of gold there and that offer to the deities. Of course, people might have their arguments about that, but that we can maybe talk about later. Similarly, the tongue has to taste good food, which should be bought and offered to the deity. The nose can be utilized in smelling the flowers offered to the deities. And hearing can be utilized by listening to the vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra. In this way, the senses can be regulated and utilized to advance in Krishna consciousness. So when I was hearing this, I was remembering a time in New York City. I used to live in the skyscraper building, Prabhupada called it. And every Monday, they would bring the deities in the elevator. Do you remember? They would come around to all the floors. That was bliss, wasn't it? We'd put on little dramas for the deities. It was so nice. And I got to one time quote verses by Prahlad Maharaj. I really loved Prahlad Maharaj's prayers. So I was remembering some of these prayers. I will chant a couple and we'll discuss them. Jivai katochita vikarshati mavitripta shishnonyatastva gudaram shravanam kutaschit krananyatascha paladrikva chakarma shaktir bhavyasa patna eva geha patim lunanti. Sound familiar? Someone else. My dear Lord, O infallible one, my position is exactly like that of a person who has many wives, all trying to attract him in their own way. Maybe, like I was mentioning on some of the tour guides, from the visitors yesterday, or it was on Sunday, I think, I gave that it's every man's dream, although I don't know if every man will admit it, unless a man is really in goodness, to have many beautiful women around. Worshipping, serving him, right? Many wives. That's just natural, Purusha Bhav. Women are more tendency to want to have one partner, but the natural tendency of the man is. If you have many wives and they're all trying to attract you in their own way, it can be very disturbing. So he's considering himself like a person who has many wives. He's talking about his senses. For example, the tongue is attracted by palatable dishes. The genitals to sex with an attractive woman, and the senses to have contact with soft things. The belly, although filled, still wants to eat more, and the ear, not attempting to hear about you, is generally attracted to cinema songs. That was Prabhupada's translation. The sense of smell is attracted to yet another side. The restless eyes are attracted to scenes of sense gratification, and the active senses are attracted elsewhere. In this way, I am certainly embarrassed. This conditioned soul is embarrassed. So we heard from Srila Prabhupada how we could engage the senses. So let's just see if we can have a little breakdown of what Prahlad Maharaj said. So he said, the tongue is attracted to palatable dishes, and the belly, although filled, still wants to eat more. So what did Prabhupada recommend? And yes, he said, the tongue has to taste good food, which should be bought and offered to the deity. Of course, in another place, the Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada said we shouldn't overeat in the name of taking prasadam. But of course, many devotees fill up on prasadam. And I notice myself that if I'm not well satisfied by prasadam when I go out, say, in public, especially if we go out to sell books or propagate Krishna consciousness, then the mind can get easily distracted. Radhagopina ki jai. Can easily get distracted by all the different waffles and cakes and ice cream and all kinds of things that are out there. So, but when you're satisfied with prasadam, it's fine. Okay. And the ear, Prabhupada says, that's what attracted to. And what was the solution that Prabhupada gave in the purport today? Yes. Hearing can be utilized by the vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra. So we have, many times we have what we call kirtan melas, and the devotees sit together for days at a time, and they get to hear from very purified and powerful kirtan leaders who really can take you into another realm and really take you beyond sense gratification and help you meditate on what it means to have a relationship with Krishna. This is the definite process. But this Krishna conscious movement is therefore teaching people to control the mind and five knowledge acquiring senses by a definite process. The sense of smell is attracted to yet another side, Prahlad Maharaj says. So what is the recommendation? The sense of smell is attracted to yet another side. It wants to always smell something nice. Incense, flowers offered to the deities, purify the sense of smell. The restless eyes are attracted to scenes of sense gratification. What's recommended? Yes. The senses demand that one see beautiful things. Therefore, money should be spent for decorating the deities in the temple. Of course, Prahlad Maharaj also mentioned two other problems: the genitals to sex with an attractive woman, and the senses of touch to contact with soft things. So Prabhupada didn't talk about that directly, but he does talk about it in other places. He often commented that it was good in, you know, that in the West the young people had become renounced from so much material enjoyment, but he said they could not give up their attraction for sex. And I remembered a nice verse that Krishna tells Uddhava. Just try to understand the mighty strength of my Maya in the shape of a woman who by the mere movement of her eyebrows can keep even the greatest conquerors of the world under her grip. Let's face it, women are beautiful. More beautiful, most women are more beautiful than most men. Isn't it? Everybody agrees to that. So we shouldn't be too offended by being called Maya Devi. Of course, Prabhupada said, for man, for woman, man is woman. So he wasn't a sexist. And today, the media is promoting this idea of sex enjoyment. Like it's the goal of life. They make it like that's really love. All the, you know, movies and books, and this is really, they think this is the real goal of life. Prabhupada says, the modern scientific method, this is in another purport, or advancement of scientific civilization encourages the enjoyment of these five senses. The younger generation is very pleased to see a beautiful form, to hear radio messages of material news and sense gratificatory songs, to smell nice scents, nice flowers, and to touch the soft body or breasts of a young woman and gradually touch the sex organs. Prabhupada was very explicit. He didn't live it all in a romantic cloud, right? That's why he said there's a definite process here. Like my friend Rupa Manjari, she's older, and she's a widow, and sometimes her guests when she has a tour are challenging her, that yeah, but won't you ever fall in love again? She goes, no. And they go, well, how can you be so sure? Because it's supposed to be a romantic, overwhelming thing that just takes you over. It's beyond your control. She goes, no, because I know how it works. First, you catch, and she's really dramatic. First they look at you, and you look at them. And then they ask to talk to you, and then you go for a walk together. She says, I stop at the eyes. Finish. Of course, she's a little older, and she's very wise, but also Papa's saying it's a step-by-step process, and if we're aware of it, then we can protect ourselves from getting overwhelmed. Unless we think it's nice to get overwhelmed, then we're really in trouble. All of this is also very pleasing to the animals. Another jolt of reality. Therefore, in human society, there are restrictions in the enjoyment of the five sense objects. If one does not follow, he becomes exactly like an animal. So we may think that it all looks very nice, all the sense enjoyment, but we should remember that the animals are doing the same things. And some people even think that that's nice. One Prabhupada was giving a lecture one time at a university, and he was speaking about if you don't try to understand what the goal of life is. You're living a life of an animal. And he said, you will become an animal in your next life. So one of the students stood up and said, Swamiji, I think it's quite okay if I become an animal in my next life. Prabhupada said, you have my blessings. Yeah, in Hawaii, it's like sense gratification loca, right? So if you get the blessings of a pure devotee, you better watch out. Not good. I mean, to get the blessings to become an animal. People think animal life is like my daughter says, her dogs are really enjoying the life. And I said, but they can't stay in that body. And second of all, we're not meant to just live a comfortable, dull life where we don't have any spiritual connection, where we don't actually come to life. Because it's like death, actually. If we're not enlivened spiritually, it's just like living in some kind of a dream or some kind of a coma. What is the use of that? If you actually can experience unlimited happiness, why should you settle for living the comfortable life of a dog? Which is temporary anyways. And how many dogs get to be born in America? You should see the dogs in India and other third world countries. You don't want to come back like that. I remember one time I was in Mayapur and these little puppies were coming along and I was trying to ignore them, because they're full of fleas and they're very dirty and we're not recommended to really handle them because we're trying to keep ourselves a little brahminical. But he was like crawling on my feet and meow. And I was trying to preach him and say, it wasn't my fault you took a dog body. You were warned, I'm sure you were warned. But I couldn't help it. I picked him up and I was patting him. And all the people that live in Mayapur were looking at me like, these Westerners are really crazy. And they don't really treat dogs well in India. They're a little bit extreme in the other direction, I find. But, we don't want to become a dog in India. Even in the holy places. We want to go back to Godhead. So Pop says, although a great deal of money goes into writing books and making movies... Oh, no, I'm saying that, sorry. I already mentioned this, don't mind. So instead of being attracted by material beauty, if one is accustomed to be attracted by the beauty of Radharani and Krishna, then the statements of Bhagavad Gita, Param Drishtva Nivartate, means getting a higher taste, holds true. When one is attracted by the transcendental beauty of Radha and Krishna, he is no longer attracted by material feminine beauty. That is the special significance of Radha Krishna worship. I was so happy when I found out that God has a girlfriend. And that the ariras, that this sex attraction which is making the world go round, has its original source in God and in its pure ontological state. It made everything just go like this for me. Ha. Now I understand. And it's for persons who can find shelter in that understanding, then whenever one sees perverted sex enjoyment, one thinks, missing the point, missing the point. And this relief from material attraction is testified by Jamunacharya. He says, since I have become attracted by the beauty of Radha and Krishna, when there is attraction for a woman or memory of sex life with a woman, I at once spit on it and my face turns in disgust. So when we are attracted by Madan Mohan means one who attracts Cupid, and the beauty of Krishna and his consorts, then the shackles of conditioned life, namely the beauty of material woman, cannot attract us. At least not attract us in a way that's degraded. If you see someone that's very beautiful, you're naturally attracted, but you don't want to ravish. You don't want to make it yours and immerse yourself in it and enjoy it. You just think, oh, beautiful, that's Krishna's. Krishna's creation is so beautiful. And that's just here in this world. In the heavenly planets, the women are no matter, they're much more beautiful, a million times more beautiful than the most beautiful woman on this planet. If we saw such a beautiful woman, we would faint. All the women would faint, everybody would faint. And not to speak if one actually can see Radharani and the gopis. The Prabhupada says from today's purport, thus a good position might not be spoiled by material sense gratification in the form of illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling. One spoils an opulent position in the material world by driving cars, spending time in nightclubs, or tasting abominable foods in restaurants. In these ways, the plundering senses take away all the assets that the conditioned soul has acquired with great difficulty. reminded me of another very beautiful verse by Prahlad Maharaj. Prabhupada often talks about eating abominable things. It's very important what we eat. Evam sakarma patitam bhavavaitaranyam anyonya janma maranashana bhutabhitam pasyam janam saparavigraha vairamaitram hanteti paracara pipdihi mudhamadhyā. So Prahlad Maharaj is praying to the Lord, "My dear Lord, you are always transcendentally situated on the other side of the river of death. But because of the reactions of our own activities, we are suffering on this side." Oh my God, is it really late? Okay, 8:30, okay. We are suffering on this side. Indeed, we have fallen into this river and are repeatedly suffering the pains of birth and death and eating horrible things. Now, kindly look upon us, not only upon me, but also upon all others who are suffering. And by your causeless mercy and compassion, deliver us and maintain us. So today, food is packaged very nicely, but doesn't change the fact that it's abominable. Many times, now I just saw a documentary on this genetically modified food. It's becoming a real danger, and it's becoming like it's coming to a point where in many countries you can't even get get ordinary pure seeds. It's being this way. One person was, I don't think they were exaggerating, said it's more dangerous than nuclear war. It's more dangerous than all. What is the other kind of war? Like germ war. They're trying to take over our food supply, and not even give us. You know, they're giving us genetically modified food. And then oftentimes when I visit my family, they want to feed me this and they want to feed me that. So they want to give me ice cream, right? So I said, well, can I read what's on the package? So it says mono and diglycerides. And then I look up mono and diglycerides on Google, and mono and diglycerides are fatty acids. But they can come from a vegetable source. They can also come from an animal source. So I tell my family, I'm not eating this. I don't know what's in it. Or my sister, she said, well, look at this nice chocolate-covered raisins and nuts. Of course, there's a controversy in our movement whether we should eat chocolate or not. Ideally, we shouldn't eat chocolate. But anyways, you know, she was trying to satisfy me, but the nuts looked kind of shiny. So I said, can I see the ingredients? So I look on there, and it has an ingredient called lac. So I look up on Google, and lac is usually made of insect juice. And I told my sister, she goes, ooh. I said, I didn't say it, but I thought, you know, you can eat dead animals, so what's wrong with insect juice, you know? What's the big deal? I didn't say it. I'm a love of my family. They, you know, they don't eat meat in front of me. They're very kind. What is it Nrsingh Ananda said? He wrote an article about our mother, the cow. He said, I dearly love my carnivorous mother. What can I say? We live in a contradictory world, because the cow was considered our mother too, because she gives us milk. So he's, I like that. It really helped me to see things. It's okay to love people even if they're carnivorous, because they're a family. So that's, you know, people getting all this food, and it looks attractive and packaged and advertised very nicely, but it's associated with the slaughter and torture of poor, helpless creatures. Why should we want to have anything to do with that? And even now, you know, if the dairy milk that we get, we should know that. Now, I mean, at least we're getting milk from an organic farmer, but farmers are forced to slaughter their old cows. It's almost unavoidable. That's why Prabhupada wanted us to have our own self-sustaining villages, so we didn't have to have anything to do with this, and that we could supply pure food to people. So Srila Prabhupada has given us a definite process for protecting ourselves from material infection. And he wants us to practice that and promote it. And if we do this under proper guidance, then our stability and strength and advancing in Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. And this is my little insights into this verse today. And thank you all for listening patiently. If anybody would like to make a comment or a question, maybe did you have some other points that you would have liked to have made out of induction? Really, yeah? What was one of the main points of your class? What was one of the main points of your class? Oh, you were going to make a PowerPoint presentation? It's a flashlight? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Oh, that's nice. Instead of the sun, it submits to the. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That was like, you were going to show this, and oh, that was the whole, yeah. So you were going to like really dwell on that aspect of illusion and ignorance. And that you say, so we should learn to make the mind our own friend. Yes, so it's along similar lines, but coming in from a different angle. Yeah, Prabhupada said we should discuss the philosophy from all different angles of vision. That's very important, because we had to see how it applies practically in our life. So any comments or questions? Or yes, sir. Yeah, that's why we're supposed to get married and regulate our sex life and have children. Or, like, even one time Krishna Chaitanya said, just because you're attracted to women doesn't mean you have to marry one. But you have to have it under control. So there's very specific, if our sexual energy is too out of control, and men know what that means, we don't have to go into the details, then once you get married, and be a gentleman. Huh? The thing is, we have to be a gentleman. Gentlemen keeps their agreement usually, and the gentle ladies keep their agreement. But it is that simple. But Prabhupada says it is the solution. Yes, that's because we're uncultured. If you meet Indian people who've been raised in cultured families, there's no question of illicit sex, there's no question of divorce, there's no question. So we don't have the culture. So if we try to be a little intelligent and try to understand all these factors and try to apply them in our life very soberly, not just wait until we fall head over heels in so-called in love with someone and get carried away, then if we try to approach the thing soberly and think, okay, I can see that I have some vulnerability here and it's making itself evident on a regular basis, let me approach my spiritual authority and discuss this with them. And then intelligently try to go about arranging one's life so that one can have family and responsibility. And when one has children, one sees this is the result of sex life. And you see how much the children have to struggle through their different stages of life and you think, sex is overrated. But what can you do? If you're, 95% of human society is going to get married and have kids. That's, how many of us are yogis that can completely transcend the desire for, first of all, personal contact with the opposite sex, and even as devotees and even people in the world, it's not that, okay, sex may be an underlying thing, but there's only so much you can have. So it's just a matter of purifying one's consciousness to realize that intimacy comes from my relationship with God. But I had to develop that relationship over a period of my lifetime. So I may need to do that with a partner. And be responsible. Because if one doesn't do it intelligently, then your senses will plunder you. And we see it, like you say, it's going on. So obviously, because of our lack of culture, in our beginning stages of this Krishna consciousness movement, we have problems because we're not cultured and we're not expert at applying these constructions. But we carry on because we have faith in Prabhupada and the Acharyas so that things will gradually improve. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, from impurity, purity will come about. If one's intentions are sincere, even if one is not particularly mature. Is that a little helpful? And as a householder, generally speaking, Prabhupada recommended, either you come regularly to the temple and worship Radha Krishna, or you have Radha Krishna in your home. And then you know that nothing in this world can compare to the relationship that Radha Krishna has, and I should just see the thing in perspective. Be a faithful partner and raise the children with responsibility, and Prabhupada said, live peacefully, like a gentleman. Anything else? Yes, Jadarani. Pardon me? Dr. Rushard, yeah? Yes. Yeah. That was his observation. Yes. Yes. Hey, so Jadarani, did you hear what she said? I will just repeat it for the devotees who might be listening in other parts of the castle. Dr. Rochefort, who is a very wonderful friend of the movement, he gave some classes here. He said he'd never had such a good, he's a professor, he'd never had such a good experience in his life as teaching in Bhaktivedanta College. But his wife is very ill, that's why he can't come back these days. But he said that he's done a sociological study on the movement for 25 years. And he said what he noticed is that those who are strictly following the religious principles within married life, the divorce rate is very, very low. And for those who are not able to follow, it's very high. And the mind is not peaceful if our mind is agitated, if the senses are plundering our material and our spiritual wealth. Then, yeah, divorce, et cetera, and et cetera. Yes, Mamie. Yes. Yes. How will it be possible to spread the holy name in every town and village? Well, it's already happening. It's really happening already. I mean, people will go to the most devotees have stories if they go to the, like, even like Nada Bihari. He was in the Himalayas, way up in the Himalayas. And he was meeting people there who had gotten cookies from his bakery. So it's like, you know, we're in the global village now. That's one of the advantages of having such worldwide communication. It's yes. Yes. We have to be a little patient. Yeah. It will change. And then it will go back again, because that's the nature of the world. Now we have the opportunity to be part of the whole thing, to try to bring the happiness of Krishna consciousness to as many people as we can. And things will go very nicely for some time. And then just like the way things are in this world, it will go down. So in the meantime, a lot of people get the opportunity to make spiritual advancement. We should try to have a spiritual vision there and not become too disheartened. The what of God? The mill. Oh, yeah, the mill of God. It's turning slow. Yeah, yeah. It's insignificant. The Prabhupada calls it spot life. This spot life, yeah. 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 Yeah, we need to try to see the world through the eyes of God. Yes. Being very friendly, being very, very... Yeah, we have to... The main thing is so that people know that we're not trying to take anything from them. We want to give them something nice. And I know my experience, if someone gives me something really nice, and I feel like they're, you know, they're just really friendly and really nice, then I just want to give them something back. It's just, it's natural. If you get something good from somebody, you just naturally want to reciprocate. So, like you say, it may feel a little slow, it may feel sometimes like overwhelming, like an overwhelming task, but actually it's a very blissful task, so we shouldn't be discouraged. Janmashtami, you know, she did it for how many years? 16 years you're on the street, Janmashtami? Janmashtami did millions of books. That's why he's all fixed up now in spiritual life. Teaching in the, you know, you heard his class the other day. That was great. Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to ask everyone to give me blessings. I'm going to Brussels and I'm going to try to do some prasadam and book distribution there and try to give out flyers for our center. So kindly give me your blessings. Jodhwan, you're coming on Saturday, right? You stay for a few days or? Okay. Great. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Prabhupada Anugas ki jai.